Welcome to Jaded YA Reads, a YA read-aloud podcast for teens, tweens, and adults, brought to you by the Wells Public Library. This season, we'll be reading The Inheritance Games by Jennifer Lynn Barnes, with permissions from Little, Brown, and Company. Chapter 33. I'd known that things would go faster with an extra set of hands, but I hadn't anticipated what it would feel like to be shut in a room with two Hawthorns, particularly these two. As we worked, Grayson behind me and Jameson above, I wondered if they'd always been like oil and water, if Grayson had always taken himself too seriously, if Jameson had always made a game of taking nothing seriously at all. I wondered if the two of them had grown up slotted into the roles of heir and spare once Nash had made it clear he would abdicate the Hawthorne throne. I wondered if they'd gotten along before Emily. "There's nothing here," Grayson punctuated that statement by placing a book back on the shelf a little too hard. "Coincidentally," Jameson commented up above, "you also don't have to be here." "If she's here, I'm here. Avery doesn't bite." For once, Jameson referred to me by my actual name. Frankly, now that the issue of relatedness has been settled in the negative, I'd be game if she did. I choked on my own spit and seriously considered throttling him. He was baiting Grayson and using me to do it. "Jamie?" Grayson sounded almost too calm. "Shut up and keep looking." I did exactly that. Book off, cover on, book reshelved. The hours ticked by. Grayson and I worked our way towards each other. When he was close enough that I could see him out of the corner of my eye, he spoke, his voice barely audible to me, and not audible to Jameson at all. "My brother's grieving for our grandfather. Surely you can understand that." I could, and I did. I said nothing. "He's a sensation seeker. Pain, fear, joy. It doesn't matter." Grayson had my full attention now, and he knew it. "He's hurting, and he needs the rush of the game. He needs for this to mean something." "This, as in his grandfather's letters, the will, me?" "And you don't think it does," I said, keeping my own voice low. Grayson didn't think I was special, didn't believe that this was the kind of puzzle worth solving. "I don't think you have to be the villain of this story to be a threat to this family." If I hadn't already met Nash, I would have pegged Grayson as the oldest brother. "You keep talking about the rest of the family," I said, "but this isn't just about them. I'm a threat to you." I'd inherited his fortune. I was living in his house. His grandfather had chosen me. Grayson was right beside me now. I am not threatened. He wasn't imposing physically. I had never seen him lose control. But the closer he came to me, the more my body threw itself into high alert. "Eris?" I startled when Jameson spoke. Reflexively, I stepped away from his brother. "Yes?" "I think I found something." I pushed past Grayson to make my way to the stairs. Jameson had found something. A book that doesn't match its cover. That was an assumption on my part, but the instant I hit the second story and saw the smile on Jameson Hawthorne's lips, I knew that I was right. He held up a hardcover book. I read the title, "Sail Away." And on the inside, Jameson was a showman at heart. He removed the cover with a flourish and tossed me the book, "The Tragical History of Dr. Faustus." "Faust," I said. "The devil you know," Jameson replied, "or the devil you don't." It could have been a coincidence. We could have been reading meaning where there was none, like people trying to intuit the future in the shape of clouds. But that didn't stop the hairs on my arms from rising. It didn't stop my heart from racing. Everything is something in Hawthorne House. That thought beat in my pulse as I opened the copy of Faust in my hands. There, taped to the inside cover, was a translucent red square. "Jameson." I jerked my eyes up from the book. "There's something here." Grayson must have been listening to us down below, but he said nothing. Jameson was beside me in an instant. He brought his fingers to the red square. It was thin, made of some kind of plastic film, maybe 4 inches long on each side. "What's this?" I asked. Jameson took the book gingerly from my hands and carefully removed the square from the book. He held it up to the light. "Filter paper." That came from down below. Grayson stood in the center of the room looking up at us. Red acetate, a favorite of our grandfather's, particularly useful for revealing hidden messages. "I don't suppose the text of that book is written in red?" I flipped to the first page. "Black ink," I said. I kept flipping. The color of the ink never changed. But a few pages in, I found a word that had been circled in pencil. A rush of adrenaline shot through my veins. Did your grandfather have a habit of writing in books? I asked.
In a first edition of Faust? Jameson snorted. I had no idea how much money this book was worth, or how much of its value had been squandered with that one little circle on the page, but I knew in my bones that we were onto something.
Where? I read the word out loud. Neither brother provided any commentary, so I flipped another page and then another. It was 50 or more before I hit another circled word.
A. I kept turning the pages. The circled words were coming quicker now, sometimes in pairs.
There is...
Jameson grabbed a pen off a nearby shelf. He didn't have any paper, so he started writing the words on the back of his left hand.
Keep going.
I did.
A again, I said.
There is, again. I was almost to the end of the book. Way, I said finally. I turned the pages more slowly now. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Finally, I looked up. That's it.
I closed the book. Jameson held his hand up in front of his body, and I stepped closer to get a better look. I brought my hand to his, reading the words he'd written there. Where, A, there is, way.
What were we supposed to do with that?
Change the order of the words, I asked. It was a common enough type of word puzzle. Jameson's eyes lit up.
Where there is a... I picked up where he'd left off. There is a way.
Jameson's lips curved upward. We're missing a word, he murmured.
Will. Another proverb. When there's a will, there's a way.
He flicked the red acetate in his hand, back and forth, as he thought out loud.
When you look through a colored filter, lines of that color disappear. It's one way of writing hidden messages. You layer the text in different colors. The book is written in black ink, so the acetate isn't meant to be used on the book.
Jameson was talking faster now, the energy in his voice contagious.
Grayson spoke up from the room's epicenter, hence the message in the book, directing us where to make use of the film.
They were used to playing their grandfather's games. They'd been trained to from the time they were young. I hadn't, but their back and forth had given me just enough to connect the dots. The acetate was meant to reveal secret writing, but not in the book. Instead, the book, like the letter before it, contained a clue, in this case, a phrase with a single missing word. Where there's a will, there's a way.
What do you think the chances are, I said slowly, turning the puzzle over in my mind, that somewhere there's a copy of your grandfather's will written in red ink?
Chapter 34. I asked Elisa about the will. I half expected her to look at me like I'd lost my marbles, but the second I said the word red, her expression shifted. She informed me that a viewing of the red will could be arranged, but first I had to do something for her. That something ended up involving a brother-sister stylist team carting what appeared to be the entire inventory of Saks Fifth Avenue into my bedroom. The female stylist was tiny and said next to nothing. The man was 6'6" and kept up a steady stream of observations.
You can't wear yellow, and I would encourage you to banish the words orange and cream from your vocabulary, but most every other color is an option. The three of us were in my room now, along with Libby, 13 racks of clothing, dozens of trays of jewelry, and what appeared to be an entire salon set up in the bathroom. Brights, pastels, earth tones in moderation. You gravitate towards solids? I looked down at my current outfit, a gray t-shirt and my second most comfortable pair of jeans.
I like simple.
Simple is a lie, the woman murmured, but a beautiful one sometimes.
Beside me, Libby snorted and bit back a grin. I glared at her.
You're enjoying this, aren't you? I asked darkly. Then I took in the outfit she was wearing. The dress was black, which was Libby enough, but the style would have fit right in at a country club.
I'd told Elisa not to pressure her.
You don't have to change how you...
I started to say, but Libby cut me off.
They bribed me. With boots. She gestured toward the back wall, which was lined with boots, all of them leather, in shades of purple, black, and blue. Ankle length, calf length, even one pair of thigh highs.
Also, Libby said serenely, creepy lockets.
If a piece of jewelry looked like it might be haunted, Libby was there.
You let them make you over in exchange for 15 pairs of boots and some creepy lockets, I said, feeling mildly betrayed.
And some incredibly soft leather pants, Libby added. Totally worth it. I'm still me, just fancy.
Her hair was still blue, her nail polish was still black, and she wasn't the one the style team was focused on now.
We should start with the hair, the male stylist declared beside me, eyeing my offended tresses.
Don't you think? He asked his sister.
There was no reply as the woman disappeared behind one of the racks. I could hear her thumbing through another, rearranging the order of the clothing. Thick. Not quite wavy, not quite straight. You could go either way. This giant man looked and sounded like he should be playing tight end, not advising me on hairstyles. No shorter than 2 inches below your chin, no longer than mid-back. Gentle layers wouldn't hurt. He glanced over at Libby. I suggest you disown her if she opts for bangs.
I'll take that under consideration, Libby said solemnly. You'd be miserable if there wasn't long enough for a ponytail, she told me.
Ponytail? That got me a censuring look from the linebacker. Do you hate your hair and want it to suffer?
I don't hate it, I shrugged. I just don't care.
That is also a lie. The woman reappeared from behind the clothing rack. She had a half dozen hangers worth of clothes in her hands, and as I watched, she hung them up, face out on the closet rack. The result was 3 different outfits. Classic, she nodded to an ice blue skirt paired with a long sleeve t-shirt. Natural. The stylist moved on to the second option, a loose and flowing floral dress combining at least 12 shades of red and pink. Preppy, with an edge. The final option included a brown leather skirt shorter than any of the others, and probably tighter, too. She'd matched it with a white-collared shirt and a heather gray cardigan.
Which calls to you? The male stylist asked. That got another snort out of Libby. She was definitely enjoying this way too much.
They're all fine. I eyed the floral dress. That one looks like it might be itchy. The stylist seemed to be developing a migraine.
Casual options? He asked his sister, pained.
She disappeared and reappeared with 3 more outfits, which she added to the first 3. Black leggings, a red blouse, and a knee-length white cardigan were paired with the classic combo. A lacy sea-green shirt and darker green pants joined the floral monstrosity, and an oversized cashmere sweater and torn jeans were hung beside the leather skirt. Classic, natural, preppy with an edge. The woman reiterated my options.
I have a philosophical objection to colored pants, I said, so that one's out.
Don't just look at the clothes, the man instructed. Take in the look.
Rolling my eyes at someone twice my size probably wasn't the wisest course of action.
The female stylist crossed to me. She walked lightly on her feet, like she could tiptoe across a bed of flowers without breaking a single one. The way you dress, the way you do your hair, it's not silly, it's not shallow. This, she gestured to the rack behind her, it's not just clothing, it's a message. You're not deciding what to wear, you're deciding what story you want your image to tell. Are you the ingenue, young and sweet? Do you dress to this world of wealth and wonders like you were born to it? Or do you walk the line, the same but different, young but full of steel?
Why do I have to tell a story? I asked.
Because if you don't tell the story, someone else will tell it for you. I turned to see Xander Hawthorne standing in the doorway, holding a plate of scones. Makeovers, he told me, like the recreational building of Rube Goldberg machines, are hungry work. I wanted to narrow my eyes, but Xander and his scones were glare-proof.
What do you know about makeovers? I grumbled. If I were a guy, there'd be 2 racks of clothing in this room, max.
And if I were white, Xander returned loftily, people wouldn't look at me like I'm half a Hawthorne.
Scone?
That took the wind out of my sails. It was ridiculous of me to think that Xander didn't know what it was like to be judged, or to have to play life by different rules. I wondered suddenly what it was like for him growing up in this house. Growing up Hawthorne.
Can I have one of the blueberry scones? I asked. My version of a peace offering.
Xander handed me a lemon scone.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
With only a moderate amount of teeth gnashing, I ended up picking option 3. I hated the word preppy almost as much as I disliked any claims to having an edge. But at the end of the day, I couldn't pretend to be wide-eyed and innocent, and I deeply suspected that any attempts to act like this world was a natural fit would itch. Not physically, but under my skin. The team kept my hair long but worked in layers and cajoled it into a bedhead wave. I'd expected them to suggest highlights, but they'd gone the opposite route. Subtle streaks a shade darker and richer than my normal ashy brown. They cleaned my eyebrows up but left them thick. I was instructed on the finer points of an elaborate facial regimen and found myself on the receiving end of a spray tan via airbrush. But they kept my makeup minimal. Eyes and lips, nothing more. Looking at myself in the mirror, I could almost believe that the girl staring back belonged in this house.
What do you think? I asked, turning to Libby.
She was standing near the window, backlit. Her hand was clutching her phone, her eyes glued to the screen. Lip? She looked up and gave me a deer in headlights look that I recognized all too well. Drake. He was texting her. Was she texting back? You look great. Libby sounded sincere, because she was sincere, always. Sincere and earnest and way, way too optimistic. He hit her, I told myself. He sold us out. She won't take him back. You look fantastic, Xander declared grandly. You also don't look like someone who might have seduced an old man out of billions, so that's good. Really, Alexander? Zara announced her presence with next to no fanfare. No one believes that Avery seduced your grandfather. Her story, her image, was somewhere between oozing class and no nonsense. But I'd seen her press conference. I knew that while she might care about her father's reputation, she didn't have any particular attachment to mine. The worse I looked, the better for her. Unless the game has changed. Avery? Zara gave me a smile as cool as the winter colors she wore. Might I have a word? Chapter 35. Zara didn't speak immediately once the two of us were alone. I decided that if she wasn't going to break the silence, I would. You talked to the lawyers. That was the obvious explanation for why she was here. I did. Zara offered no apologies. And now I'm talking to you. I'm sure you can forgive me for not doing so sooner. As you can imagine, this has all come as a bit of a shock. A bit? I snorted and cut through the niceties. You held a press conference strongly suggesting that your father was senile, and that I'm under investigation by the authorities for elder abuse. Zara perched at the end of an antique desk, one of the few surfaces in the room not covered with accessories or clothes. Yes, well, you can thank your legal team for not making certain realities apparent sooner. If I get nothing, you get nothing. I wasn't going to let her come in here and dance around the truth. You look nice. Zara changed the subject and eyed my new outfit. Not what I would have chosen for you, but you're presentable. Presentable with an edge. Thanks, I grunted. You can thank me once I've done what I can to ease you through this transition. I wasn't naive enough to believe that she'd had a sudden change of heart. If she despised me before, she despised me now. The difference was that now she needed something. I figured that if I waited long enough, she'd tell me exactly what that something was. I'm not sure how much Elisa has told you, but in addition to my father's personal assets, you've also inherited control of my family's foundation. Zara took measure of my expression before continuing. It's one of the largest private charitable foundations in the country. We give away upward of $100 million in a year. $100 million. I was never going to get used to this. Numbers like that were never going to seem real. Every year? I asked, stunned. Zara smiled placidly. Compound interest is a lovely thing. $100 million a year in interest? And she was just talking about the foundation, not Tobias Hawthorne's personal fortune. For the first time, I actually ran the math in my head. Even if taxes took half of the estate, and I only averaged a 4% yield, I'd still be making nearly $1 billion a year, doing nothing. That was just wrong. Who does the foundation give its money to? I asked quietly. Zara pushed off the desk and began pacing the length of the room. The Hawthorne Foundation invests in children and families, health initiatives, scientific advancement, community building, and the arts. Under those headings, you could support nearly anything. I could support nearly anything. I could change the world. I've spent my entire adult life running the foundation. Zara's lips pulled tight across her teeth. There are organizations that rely on our support. If you intend to exert yourself, there's a right way and a wrong way to do that. She stopped right in front of me. You need me, Avery. As much as I'd like to wash my hands of all of this, I've worked too long and too hard to see that work undone. I listened to what she was saying and what she wasn't. Does the foundation pay you? I asked. I ticked off the seconds until her reply. I draw a salary commensurate with the skills I bring. As satisfying as it would have been to tell her that her services were no longer needed, I wasn't that impulsive, and I wasn't cruel. I want to be involved, I told her, and not just for show. I want to make decisions. Homelessness, poverty, domestic violence, access to preventative care. What could I do with $100 million a year? You're young enough, Zara said, her voice almost wistful, to believe that money solves all ills. Spoken like a person so rich, she can't imagine the weight of problems money can solve. If you're serious about taking a role at the Foundation... Zara sounded like she was enjoying saying that about as much as she would have enjoyed dumpster diving or a root canal. I can teach you what you need to know, Monday, after school, at the Foundation. She issued each part of that order as its own separate sentence. The door opened before I could ask exactly where the Foundation was. Oren took up position beside me. The women will come after you in the courtroom, he told me, but now Zara knew that she couldn't come after me legally, and my head of security didn't want me in this room with her alone. Chapter 36. The next day, Sunday, Oren drove me to Ortega, McNamara, and Jones to see the Red Will. Avery. Elisa met Oren and me in the firm's lobby. The place was modern, minimalist, and full of chrome. The building looked big enough to host 100 lawyers, but as Elisa walked us past a receptionist and a security guard to an elevator bank, I didn't see another soul. You said I was the firm's only client, I commented as the elevator began to climb. Exactly how big is the firm? There are a few different divisions, Elisa replied crisply. Mr. Hawthorne's assets were quite diversified. That requires a diverse array of lawyers. And the will I asked about, it's here? My pocket held a gift from Jameson, the square of red film we discovered taped to the inside cover of Faust. I told him I was coming here, and he'd handed it over, no questions asked, like he trusted me more than he trusted any of his brothers. The Red Will is here, Elisa confirmed. She turned to Oren. How much company did we have today? She asked. By company, she meant paparazzi, and by we, she meant me. It's tapered off a little, Oren reported, but odds are good that they'll be piled outside the door by the time we leave. If we ended the day without at least one headline that said something along the lines of, World's richest teenager lawyers up, I'd eat a pair of Libby's new boots. On the third floor, we passed through another security checkpoint, and then finally, Elisa led me to a corner office. The room was furnished but otherwise empty, with one exception. Sitting in the middle of a heavy mahogany desk was the will. By the time I saw it, Oren had taken up position outside the door. Elisa made no move to follow me when I approached the desk. As I got closer, the type jumped out at me. Red. My father was instructed to keep this copy here and show it to you or the boys if one of you came looking, Elisa said. I looked back at her. Instructed, I repeated. By Tobias Hawthorne? Naturally. Did you tell Nash? I asked. A cool mask settled over her face. I don't tell Nash anything anymore. She gave me her most austere look. If that's all, I'll leave you to it. Elisa never even asked what it was. I waited until I heard the door close behind her before I went to sit at the desk. I retrieved the film from my pocket. Where there's a will, I murmured, laying the square flat on the will's first page, there's a way. I moved the red acetate over the paper, and the words beneath it disappeared. Red text, red film. It worked exactly as Jameson and Grayson had described. If the entire will was written in red, all this was going to do was make everything disappear. But if, layered underneath the red text, there was another color, then anything written in that color would remain visible. I made it past Tobias Hawthorne's initial bequests to the Laughlins, to Oren, and to his mother-in-law. Nothing. I got to the bit about Zara and Skye, and as I skimmed the red film over the words, they disappeared. I glanced down at the next sentence. To my grandsons, Nash Westbrook Hawthorne, Grayson Davenport Hawthorne, Jameson Winchester Hawthorne, and Alexander Blackwood Hawthorne. As I ran the film over the page, the words disappeared, but not all of them. Four remained. Westbrook, Davenport, Winchester, Blackwood. For the first time, I thought about the fact that all four of Skye's sons bore her last name, their grandfather's last name, Hawthorne. Each of the boys' middle names was also a surprise. Their father's last names, I wondered. As my brain wrapped itself around that, I made my way through the rest of the document. Part of me expected to see something when I hit my own name, but it disappeared, just like the rest of the text. Everything except for the Hawthorne grandson's middle names. Westbrook, Winchester, Davenport, Blackwood. I said them out loud, committed them to memory. And then I texted Jameson, and wondered if he would text Grayson. Chapter 37.
Whoa there, kid. Where's the fire?
I was back at Hawthorne House and headed to meet Jameson when another Hawthorne brother stopped me in my tracks. Nash. Avery just came from reading a special copy of the will, Elisa said behind me. So much for her not telling her ex anything anymore. A special copy of the will. Nash slid his gaze to me. Would I be correct in assuming this has something to do with the gobbledygook in my letter from the old man? Your letter, I repeated, my brain whirring. It shouldn't have come as a surprise. Tobias Hawthorne had left Grayson and Jameson with identical clues. Nash, too, and probably Xander. Don't worry, Nash drawled. I'm sitting this one out. I told you, I don't want the money. The money is not at stake here, Elisa said firmly. The will is ironclad, Nash finished for her. I believe I've heard that a time or two. Elisa's eyes narrowed. You never were very good at listening. Listen doesn't always mean agree, Lee. Nash's use of the nickname, his amiable smile and equal amiable tone, sucked every ounce of oxygen out of the room. I should go. Elisa turned, whip fast, to me. If you need anything, call, I finished, wondering just how high my eyebrows had risen at their exchange. When Elisa closed the front door behind her, she slammed it. You gonna tell me where you're heading in such a hurry? Nash asked me once again, once she was gone. Jameson asked me to meet him in the solarium. Nash cocked an eyebrow at me. Got any idea where the solarium is? I realized belatedly that I didn't. I don't even know what a solarium is, I admitted. Solariums are overrated. Nash shrugged and gave me an assessing look. Tell me, kid, what do you usually do on your birthday? That came out of nowhere. I felt that it had to be a trick question, but I answered anyway. Eat cake? Every year on our birthdays. Nash stared off into the distance. The old man would call us into his study and say the same three words. Invest, cultivate, create. He gave us $10,000 to invest. Can you imagine letting an 8-year-old choose stocks? Nash snorted. Then we got to pick a talent or interest to cultivate for the year. A language, a hobby, an art, a sport. No expenses were spared. If you picked piano, a grand piano showed up the next day. Private lessons started immediately, and by midway through the year, you'd be backstage at Carnegie Hall, getting tips from the greats. That's amazing, I said, thinking about all the trophies I'd seen in Tobias Hawthorne's office. Nash didn't exactly look amazed. The old man also laid out a challenge every year, he continued, his voice hardening. An assignment, something we were expected to create by the next birthday. An invention, a solution, a work of museum-quality art. Something. I thought about the comic books I'd seen framed on the wall. That doesn't sound horrible. It doesn't, does it? Nash said, ruminating on those words. Come on. He jerked his head toward a nearby corridor. I'll show you the solarium. He started walking, and I had to jog to keep up. Did Jameson tell you about the old man's weekly riddles? Nash asked as we walked. Yeah, I said, he did. Sometimes, Nash told me, at the beginning of a game, the old man would lay out a collection of objects. A fishing hook, a price tag, a glass ballerina, a knife. He shook his head in memory. And by the time the puzzle was solved, damned if we hadn't used all four. He smiled, but it didn't reach his eyes. I was so much older. I had an advantage. Jamie and Gray, they'd team up against me, then double-cross each other right at the end. Why are you telling me this? I asked, as his pace finally slowed to a near standstill. Why tell me any of this? About their birthdays, the presents, the expectations? Nash didn't answer right away. Instead, he nodded down a nearby hall. Solarium's the last door on the right. Thanks, I said. I walked toward the door Nash had indicated, and right before I reached my destination, he spoke up behind me. You might think you're playing the game, darling, but that's not how Jamie sees it. Nash's voice was gentle enough, but for the words. We aren't normal. This place isn't normal, and you're not a player, kid. You're the glass ballerina, or the knife. Chapter 38 The solarium was an enormous room with a domed glass ceiling and glass walls. Jameson stood in the center, bathed in light and staring up at the dome overhead. Like the first time I'd met him, he was shirtless. Also like the first time I'd met him, he was drunk. Grayson was nowhere to be seen. What's the occasion? I asked, nodding to a nearby bottle of bourbon. Westbrook, Davenport, Winchester, Blackwood. Jameson rattled off the names, one by one. Tell me, Eris, what do you make of that? They're all last names, I said cautiously. I paused and then decided why the hell not. Your father's? Skye doesn't talk about our fathers, Jameson replied, his voice a little hoarse. As far as she's concerned, it's an Athena Zeus type of situation, where hers and hers alone. I bit my lip. She told me that she had 4 lovely conversations. With 4 lovely men, Jameson finished, but lovely enough for her to ever see them again, to tell us the first thing about them? His voice was harder now. She's never so much as answered a question about our damned middle names, and that, he picked up the bourbon off the ground and took a swig, is why I'm drinking. He sat the bottle back down, then closed his eyes, standing in the sun a moment longer, his arms spread wide. For the second time, I noticed the scar that ran the length of his torso, noticed each breath he took. Shall we go? His eyes opened, his arms dropped. Go where? I asked, so physically aware of his presence it almost hurt. Come now, Eris, Jameson said, stepping toward me. You're better than that. I swallowed and answered my own question. We're going to see your mother. He took me through the coat closet in the foyer. This time, I paid close attention to the sequence of panels on the wall that released the door. Following Jameson to the back of the closet, pushing past the coats that hung there, I willed my eyes to adjust to the dark so that I could see what he did next. He touched something. Pulled it? I couldn't make out what. The next thing I knew, I heard the sound of gears turning, and the back wall of the closet slid sideways. If the closet was dark, what lay beyond was even darker. Step where I step, mystery girl, and watch your head. Jameson used his cell phone to light the way. I got the distinct feeling that that was for my benefit. He knew the twists and turns of these hidden hallways. We walked in silence for 5 minutes before he stopped and peeked through what I could only assume was a peephole. Coast is clear. Jameson didn't specify what it was clear of. Do you trust me? I was standing in a phone-lit passageway, close enough to feel his body heat on mine. Absolutely not. Good. He reached out, grabbed my hand, and pulled me close. Hold on. My arms curved around him, and the ground beneath our feet began to move. The wall beside us was rotating, and we were rotating with it. My body pressed flat against his. Jameson Winchester Hawthorne's. The motion stopped, and I stepped back. We were here for a reason, and that reason had exactly nothing to do with the way my body fit against his. They were a twisted, broken mess before you got here, and they'll be a twisted, broken mess once you're gone. The reminder echoed in my head as we stepped out into a long hallway, with plush red carpet and gold molding on the walls. Jameson strode toward a door at the end of the hallway. He lifted his head to knock. I stopped him. You don't need me for this, I said. You didn't need me for the will either. Elisa had instructions to let you see it if you asked. I need you. Jameson knew exactly what he was doing, the way he was looking at me, the tilt of his lips. I don't know why yet, but I do. Nash's warning rang in my head. I'm the knife, I swallowed. The fishing hook, the glass ballerina, whatever. That almost took Jameson by surprise. You've been talking to one of my brothers. He paused. Not Grayson. His eyes roved over mine. Xander? His eyes flicked down to my lips and up again. Nash, he said, certain of it. Is he wrong? I asked. I thought about Tobias Hawthorne's grandsons going to see him on their birthdays. They'd been expected to be extraordinary. They'd been expected to win. Am I just a means to an end, worth keeping around until you know how I fit into the puzzle? You are the puzzle, mystery girl. Jameson believed that. You could tap out, he told me. Decide you can live without answers, or you could get them, with me. An invitation. A challenge. I told myself that I was doing this because I needed to know, not because of him. Let's get some answers, I said. When Jameson knocked on the door, it swung inward. Mom? He called. Then he amended the salutation. Sky? The answer came like a tinkling of bells. In here, darling. Here, it became quickly apparent, was the bathroom in Sky's suite. Got a second? Jameson stopped right outside the double doors to the bathroom. Thousands of them. Sky seemed to relish the reply. Millions. Come in. Jameson stayed outside the doors. Are you decent? I like to think so, his mother called back, at least a good 50% of the time. Jameson pushed the bathroom door inward, and I was greeted by the sight of the biggest bathtub I'd ever seen in my life, sitting up on a dais. I focused on the tub's claw feet, gold, to match the moldings in the hallway, not the woman currently in the bathtub. You said you were decent. Jameson did not sound surprised. I'm covered in bubbles, Skye replied airily. It doesn't get any more decent than that. Now, tell your mother what you need. Jameson glanced back at me, as to say, and you asked why I needed the bourbon. I'll stay out here, I said, turning around before I caught sight of more than bubbles. Oh, don't be a prude, Abigail, Skye admonished from inside the bathroom. We're friends here, aren't we? I make it a policy to befriend everyone who steals my birthright. I've never seen passive aggression quite like this. If you're done messing with Avery, Jameson interjected, I'd like to have a little chat. So serious, Jamie? Skye sighed audibly. Well, go on, then. My middle name. I've asked you before if I was named after my father. Skye was quiet for a moment. Hand me my champagne, would you? I heard Jameson moving around the bathroom behind me, presumably fetching her champagne. Well, he asked. If you'd been a girl, Skye said with the air of a bard, I would have named you after myself. Skylar, perhaps, or Skyla. She took what I could only assume was a sip of champagne. Toby was named for my father, you know. The mention of her long-gone brother caught my attention. I didn't know how or why, but Toby's death had somehow started this all. My middle name, Jameson reminded her. Where did you get it? I'd be happy to answer your question, darling, Skye paused, just as soon as you give me a moment alone with your delightful little friend.